Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Indie Football Podcast. Today I'm delighted to be joined by the sports editor of The Independent, Ben Burrows, chief football writer Miguel Delaney and star columnist Tony Evans. And we're going to be talking about super clubs, super leagues and FIFA's controversial plans to revamp the much maligned Club World Cup. We've really wanted to do this podcast ever since Miguel wrote a piece in the wake of Liverpool's victory over Sheffield United, which questioned whether their level of dominance is good for football. But we held off and we're glad that we did, because last week La Liga president Javier Tebas went public with his criticisms of FIFA and the changing landscape of club football. And it really ties in well with some of the themes Miguel was getting at, and also a lot of the stuff that Tony has been writing on about a proposed European Super League 2. We're going to get on to Liverpool and those fiendish Super League plans in the second half of the show. But let's start with Tebas. Miguel, you were at the launch of La Liga's new TV channel in London last week, which is where Tebas spoke. What did you make of him and his criticisms, and what was his complaint with FIFA over the plans to expand the Club World Cup?
Well, first of all, I was actually slightly struck by him, because this is a man with a very, politically or in terms of nationalism, quite right-wing views, and yet his instincts for football were all very left-wing. And I don't think that was born out of self-interest. I did genuinely think that was born out of a collective interest, especially given that he was actually criticising the Spanish Federation for going to Saudi Arabia. And even beyond the that press conference with Tebas, in relation to this whole wider team, it's even since that Sheffield United match, we've had two massive developments where the Deloitte money list and the UEFA benchmarking report, which are going to put all these problems in black and white, which is that the game is massively split, and that split comes just under 11 massively wealthy clubs. And that was one of Tebas's arguments, that there is this huge financial stretch in the game where a lot of main parties are getting worried about their piece with FIFA, who, as he puts it, should merely be regulators and safeguards of the game. And I totally agree with that. And yet, instead of that, they see what UEFA make from the Champions League, want a piece of it, and are now creating this tournament that actually threatens to bring a load of football's major problems to a head. I mean, that genuinely isn't overstating it. This could be the issue that finally starts to... I mean, for so many years, there's been worries about Super League, all the rest of it. But I do think this competition has the potential to finally cause a split in the game. I mean, first of all, there's this ongoing tension with the calendar. There's no real place. It's already caused the African nations to be put back. But then it won't just disrupt the calendar, it'll totally disrupt the financial balance of the game, because to even entice the European clubs who are against it at the moment, they're going to have to offer 50 million. And 50 million for a month's work in a summer, that suddenly changes positions. And it's also what some of them will get in an entire Champions League season in the space of a month. So they're not going to say no to that. If that happens, anyone that gets that money, especially if they're not from a major league, it completely disrupts that league. And beyond anything, then suddenly that'll already change FIFA's power over the clubs. It'll potentially cause a backlash from UEFA. And even where this is taking place, it's in China with everyone thinks Saudi backing. Basically, so rather than FIFA scrutinising sports washing links, it's actually facilitating them. And it's just a mental situation.
I suppose one of the most interesting things
about rant.
What he was talking about is that obviously he's criticised FIFA, we'll come on to that, but he's also taken a shot at the Spanish Football Federation, because they, of course, took the Super Cup to Saudi Arabia, which he has said was a bad move, and obviously leads to these kind of allegations of sports washing. So I suppose those criticisms are just as influential and impactful as the FIFA criticism.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. What's going on? You know, and he's weighed it in feet first. In his own backyard, you know, Real Madrid and Barcelona's links with the Middle East are really strong. And obviously, they're two of the super clubs that will be involved in the Club World Cup. The problem is with as well as the European Super League, the revamp of the Champions League, you've got all these clubs who are saying, "Oh well, we're not really in favour." You know, the Big 11, we're not really in favour of it in public, but in reality, they're waiting to see what money's on offer to see if they need to jump, and they will jump. It's all about money. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if the Club World Cup money goes up significantly from 50 million. I mean, the figures that have been bandied around in the past have been as high as 175.
Well, even I think 50 million is basically just the entry fee, and that's possibly for some of the lesser clubs, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is potentially to what they want, an African super club, which would completely destroy African football.
Well, I mean, it's going to just change the nature of the game in South America completely, Africa, you know, Oceania. It's the madness of it.
And the lack of foresight is a disgrace. And Tebas is right in that sense, from the body that's ultimately, more than anyone, is about to be about whatever about recent corruption scandals. I mean, fundamentally, FIFA should be about the safeguarding of the sport. And yet, instead, it's actually unthinkingly, you know, trammelling along with these plans that could completely change it.
It's interesting, I think, when you get Jurgen Klopp speaking yesterday saying, oh, he would happily take less money for less games. But, I mean, the reality is he has no say.
Yeah.
And the people above his head are going to say yes. If it's 175 million for a month's work, then obviously they're going to say yes. So it's sort of, it's, you're going to have the high profile figures like Pep saying that they should scrap the League Cup because he's no use for it and there's already too many games. Everybody wants to get rid of FA Cup replays. And yet, they have no power, so the biggest figures in the game are all saying the one thing, but in the end it makes no difference.
And the thing is as well, everyone gets on board, goes, yeah, what's the League Cup for? Yeah, let's scrap it. What they don't realise, that's the start of the slippy slope.
Yeah.
Once you scrap the League Cup, well, you know, you scrap the FA Cup replays, and then, you know, you start scrapping FA Cup, or, you know, the big clubs stay out of it, and then all of a sudden, you've got a Super League, and it's, you know, the drip effect.
Well, Gavin Marcotti, he referred to how that happens basically quite well in a column he did yesterday on the Oven window, where essentially it's just the gradual normalisation of stuff that would have been massively extreme 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And I think the same is applied to, I mean, what's kicked off this whole discussion to a degree, even Liverpool's record this season, which is obviously absolutely sensational. But like the blunt reality is, a win return like this just wasn't possible 20 years ago because there wasn't the same disparity. And a lot of stuff that's going on in the game now just wasn't possible. I mean, even people point to the German situation as the kind of, that's just how it is. Well, up until this run, Bayern had never won more than three titles in a row, and there was always a disruption, always another club that came in a way that's just impossible. So it's never been like this.
Yeah, look at La Liga, like 20 years ago, you know, you had Valencia in there, you know, there were teams that it wasn't just dominated by the big two as it is now. You know, it's, obviously Atletico have been strong, but, you know, it was a more competitive league, you know. You had
same in the Premier League, right? Even Ferguson's great teams only won, three in a row once?
Yeah.
So there was Chelsea once, there was Arsenal once, and then City latterly. It's very difficult to do, and yet you look now, it's like, well, who could possibly challenge City and Liverpool?
So obviously, I'm doing a big piece in this, which will be out in about 2 weeks. But even, we've got loads of metrics and stats along these lines, but there were more clubs that finished in the top four in England between 1990 and 95 than there have been in the whole of the 2000s.
Well, you know, I mean, you look at the first year Manchester United won the league, first year of the Premier League, the first year after 26 years of not winning it. But, you know, the two teams who were vying for it with them were Villa and Norwich.
That
will never happen again.
Yeah.
Sticking with the Club World Cup, you mentioned that how it could kind of impact on, you know, having an African super club or teams from South America. Obviously, in the UK, we've always had quite a kind of suspicious attitude towards the Club World Cup. And in Europe and overseas, there's a kind of slightly more positive reception to it. But can you actually see a future where, if you have this Club World Cup, it's gonna harm domestic competitions all over the world, not just in Europe?
Oh, definitely. And it'll also harm the clubs that take part in it, in the sense that, you know, the more games for the players, you know, it's going to go in the summer. And that's the other component of it. We're wringing, like, everything out of the talent.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it's at some point, that, you know, the talent's not inexhaustible.
Yeah.
At some point, there's not going to be enough players.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, inherently, the Club World Cup isn't a bad idea if there's space in it for the calendar, they can find a way to make it work, and it doesn't involve the sort of money that just completely destroys football.
This is what Klopp said yesterday. Yeah. He said, name me the year when there won't be a tournament. Yeah. And that's it, isn't it? You've got Copa America, World Cup, Euros, Club World Cup. There's never going to be a break. And you see, like you say, you're harming the talent. You've seen players like Sanchez just break down because he's had 2 years of being at full gas the entire time, and then he's now broken irretrievably, it would seem. And he's not going to be the first one. He's not the last either, is he? He's damaging. It's, yeah, like such a lack of foresight in that you're going to overall damage the product. It's something that Miggs wrote about earlier in the year when Liverpool's reserves beat Arsenal's reserves in the League Cup in a great game. But it's basically how much football is too much football. Mm. At a certain point, you are weakening the product because you're seeing Liverpool on TV, a great team, but you're going to see them on TV 60 times a year.
Yeah.
And, you know, Harry Kane, you look at him now, I bet good money that he's not going to be playing when he's 30.
Do you reckon? At all, or to this level?
Well, at all. You know, with the injuries he's got, the way that he picks them up, the amount of football. He had 4 years, didn't he?
Yeah.
Where he didn't have a summer off.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it's just... you know, it's all right. You know, you say, oh, they're young. You know, it was 3 years or four. Anyway, doesn't matter. Three is bad enough.
Yeah.
But, you know, you say, oh, you know, he was, what, 20, 21. But you're just ruining your body.
Yeah.
Miguel, you mentioned earlier there that one of the significant backers of a revamped tournament would represent Saudi Arabian interests. Obviously, there's been so much talk about sports washing in sport and in football. Do you think this is a further example of how FIFA is actually facilitating sports washing rather than trying to combat it?
Yeah, totally. I mean, and again, the governing body should really be, all right, it can't legislate on ownership in individual countries, but it should still be scrutinising and doing analysis and benchmarking reports on the influences on football. That really should be what the body's about. And instead of that, it just goes a complete opposite direction, seeks to make as much money as possible, and get into deals like this. And I was talking to the New York Times' Tariq Panj about this, actually, about just before that Tebas, or actually it was after the Tebas press conference, because we were obviously like discussing all these various issues. And we're kind of talking about how the fundamental problem here is that anyone in a position like FIFA, or Infantino's position or Blatter's position, it's now of such a status and such a role and profile that obviously it's going to attract a certain type of figure. I mean, it's not going to get Lennart Johansson's anymore. He's UEFA, obviously. But and they don't see themselves just sitting there to safeguard the game. They want to leave their mark, to leave a legacy. And with Blatter, for all his many, many faults, you know, a lot of people know him, say there was at least this kind of weird romance about him where he saw the game as attempting to like solve, you know, bring world peace. Mm. And like that his big goal was to get Nobel Peace Prize. Whereas Infantino's legacy feels different, that he wants to kind of leave, it's almost as if he wants a tournament named after him, which like this Club World Cup. Mm. And he's been much more nakedly about making as much money as possible for FIFA.
It does seem more than ever that UEFA and FIFA are now essentially locked in this tit-for-tat situation where you've got the Club World Cup plans being made public and now the Champions League, you know, there might be an extra four games. So it's just this kind of, you know, constant battle between the two.
And for what? Like, what is this all for? I mean, because people don't actually make that much money out of football. Most investors don't, relative to other things. So as David Goldblatt put it to me for this piece I'm doing in 2 weeks, it's like the game is involved in this kind of deathlock that's spiraling out of control for the purpose of about 12 vested interests. It's actually, when you stand back, it's madness.
Okay, we're going to head to a very quick break. When we get back, we're going to be talking about Liverpool's dominance in the Premier League, as well as attempting to figure out exactly what constitutes a super club.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to the Indie Football Podcast. Okay, let's move on to Miguel's Liverpool article, because I'm really interested to hear your thoughts on it. So a few weeks back, it was the 3rd of January, we published a feature piece of yours after Liverpool's fairly comprehensive 2-0 win over Sheffield United, which was called Liverpool's Incredible Run Deserves Praise, but the manner of their dominance provides concern for the future of the game. Miguel, for the benefit of those who haven't read it, do you want to maybe give us a brief overview, as well as telling us why you decided to lift your head over the parapet and write this?
Yeah, well, the entire point was Liverpool, they are a super club. They're one of the 11 wealthiest clubs in the world. One, I think, the 7th highest revenue as of the latest figures. And while it doesn't, that means that they themselves have to defy a certain amount of economics to even get ahead of a club like City. So they've done superbly there, but they still have the advantage of a financial platform to make them competitive in the first place. And it was just some. The starting point is that they're brilliantly run. They deserve so much praise, and it's obviously an exceptional team. But as I was watching that match and just saw all the praise gushing forward about them and of this record, which is totally ahistorical, it did just strike me, right, this is obviously brilliant, but it does warrant a little bit of context as well, because as we've already said in this spot, such records, they've never been seen before in football. Mm. And the major change in football has been the explosion of money into it. So this is the major reason. We have to put it in this context. And I just wrote the piece in that regard.
Were you surprised at the kind of strength of reaction on both sides?
Maybe this is a bit naive of me in this sense, but I actually expected a bit more maturity from a certain strand of Liverpool fans about what they are as a club. Because you can't on one side boast about how massive you are all the time, and then on the other side try and present yourself as some kind of underdog.
Mm. Yeah, so some of the responses, you'd think they were Wimbledon going through the divisions, you know. No matter how you curve it up, and Klopp's been brilliant, absolutely been brilliant, yeah. You can't argue with that. And, you know, some of the transfer policy, while, you know, sort of, from this point of view, you know, sort of, you know, you say, oh, it's all been perfect. That's right in history backwards. It's been up and down. But the reality is, what changed things, what made Liverpool into this dominant team, was spending record fees on a centre-half and a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
And no matter what you say, there's only what? There's, you could say 11 clubs in the world who can do that. You know, probably less. And Liverpool are one of them. So don't try and tell me that, like, it's been done on the cheap and it's done. You know, this is a super club flexing the muscles and they've got the rewards.
Well, I was reading Ferran Soriano's book last night, actually, just for a search. The one from about 2010, The Ball Doesn't Go By Chance. Mm. And whatever you think about Soriano and his visions for football, which I think a lot of us in this room might disagree with, some of those visions come from the fact that his business analysis is exceptional. And he was putting it into, he was talking about all this. He said there's only a strand of clubs that can compete on a truly global level because of the global support, which allows huge commercialization, huge revenues, and everyone else basically has to decide what they are within that. And if they want to compete at Champions League level, as he pointed to a conversation he had with Leon, where Barcelona hammered Leon in 2007-08. And this is as early as 2007-08. And the Leon director turns to him, I think we overstretched ourselves a bit this year. Basically, I mean, if they really want to compete, they have to be sensible. Mm-hmm. And the only way to get into this is basically what City have done, which is to be bought over by usually questionable interests in sport.
Not wanting to make everything about Man United, which is what most people do all the time, but it does sort of put into perspective just how bad Manchester United have been. To be able to, it's something that Miguel has mentioned before, that they had this unbelievable advantage over Liverpool and everybody for nigh on 30 years. And then in the space of 6, have managed to waste all of it.
Yeah.
And they are the ultimate super club in that they were richer than everybody. Even when they finished 6th, 7th, they were still richer than everybody. And now it's taken this long, 4 or 5 years out of it, to finally Liverpool, so according to the Deloitte Money League, there was the warning that if they continue to lose the revenue from the Champions League, they will fall below Liverpool as no longer the richest club in England, which is basically the first time that's ever happened.
Barcelona are now the biggest revenue-making team in the world and almost the most commercialised team in the world. And they've openly admitted, or Soriano openly admitted when they transformed the club in 2003, that United were the model. And that's actually accelerated since the Glazers took over United, which itself is a tragedy of modern football that was allowed to happen. But one of the consequences has been not just what's happened to United in that regard, but we have to say this really, the marketing intelligence of the Glazers to rip up, to basically turn the whole football revenue creation procedure on its head. And rather than have a few key sponsors to divide the world into all these different areas where they can just squeeze it dry.
It's something that Rory Smith mentioned the other day, is that commercially, Manchester United are still almost as big as they've ever been.
Yeah.
It's where they're losing out is they no longer get any Champions League revenue because they aren't in it anymore. And that's where Liverpool and Barcelona and Real Madrid are ahead of them, because they are equally commercially massive, colossal companies outside of football and in it. It's the fact that United aren't competing on the field. And going back to the Super Club thing, it is shocking they've sort of wasted this advantage, which Liverpool and City and others, Bayern Munich, have taken advantage of routinely.
Yeah. Well, the thing is as well, it's, you know, there's no divine right to super club status. I mean, most of the United deals are about the midway point now.
Yeah.
And around the time when you start thinking about renegotiating. If they're not in the Champions League, then they're going to get less money from the commercial deals, and they're going to start slipping badly. You're in a situation where Ed Woodward says, what happens on the pitch has no impact on the commercial revenues. Well, yeah, probably for a year, for 2 years. But once you go beyond 5 years, it does have a real impact.
Yeah.
And what they'll do, they'll find themselves dropping down the super club ladder
while
other people, sort of move on. And it won't be so easy to claw back those fans, because, you have a whole generation who'll be, probably don't have the same level of allegiance that people had in the past to clubs. You know, there's a little bit of the way the game's, sort of moved on. It's almost like, more like, sort of the pop band scenes, someone's big for a while, all the kids are into them, and then someone else comes along and they're big, and, sort of it shifts, and, you're still there, people still know Robbie Williams, but it's not the year 2000 when he was the biggest name in the UK. And there's a little bit of that going on in football.
Funny enough, actually, and the football industry now generates more money than the entire music industry in Europe.
Yeah,
which is actually an incredible stat, really. But even in relation to that, Soriano talks about in that book about how the key is clubs to maximise their financial potential. And I think that's probably the issue. Up until the last few years of FSG, Liverpool weren't maximising their financial potential and what they could be. I did make the point that the first and best way to do that is actually to invest in the playing side and make the team better, because ultimately that's your product and you're selling that product. And then he starts going on about how you're not truly in competition with the super clubs. Aren't truly in competition with each other in that regard. They're actually in competition, as he put it, Disney, Fox, who Disney now own, because they're ultimately producing content, and that content has to be high quality. Which is, again, is a really disturbing way to look at football. But it's when you actually apply these business principles, that's exactly what's happened.
I think what I found surprising about the reaction to your piece, and again, maybe this is me being a little bit naive, but is how vehemently Liverpool fans didn't want their club to be perceived as a super club, which I thought they would take some sort of pride in.
Everyone wants to be, ultimately, everyone wants their victory to be seen as the purest.
Yeah, this is what I wanted to come on to, because 8 hours after your piece was published, a reply was published on Liverpool.com, which for the uninitiated, is a Liverpool-focused website from the same publishers as Liverpool Echo. The piece was called "Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool Don't Need to Apologise for Dominance No Matter What the Media Says." And it includes the line, "Liverpool and Klopp can hold their collective heads high because they have found a way to achieve greatness in a manner which completely defies the odds under modern norms of bought success and incessant greed." I mentioned that
greed. Like, Liverpool have been involved in discussions to bring more money from international rights to their club. To the top six clubs.
This is the thing. It all comes back to needing to win more, needing to win better, or needing to be more pure, or needing to be the underdogs constantly.
There is an element in the Liverpool fan base that wants to tell you that everything is absolutely brilliant all the time. So, even if someone has a terrible game, there'll be a piece that comes out which says, you don't need to worry about this because, and they'll prove it with stats, they were really very good. And you know what? Like any club, there are flaws, there are problems, and they've done things the wrong way in certain areas. But people don't want to accept that. Mm. They want to see it as as I say, you know, they want it both ways. They want to be a super club with a global fan base, and they're really proud of that. But they also want to be underdogs who, and you can't.
That's it, right? It's like you can't be an underdog while also boasting a conservative estimate 9 of the world 11.
Yeah.
Like that is a super club. They've got Trent Alexander-Arnold, who's one of their own, but they've also bought in the best goalkeeper in the world and the best centre back in the world, and then they've made Roberto Firmino into the best false nine in the world. And now there's the push to have Jordan Henderson as the best defensive midfielder in the world, if you believe that or not. You can't have it both ways. Yeah. They are a super club. All the revenue suggests they're a super club. The fan base suggests they're a super club. And they're benefiting from it because they're being run properly and they're using that advantage, which they haven't done in the last 30 years between league titles.
And their wage bill is super club wage bill. I mean, I'm only referring to the Soriano book so much because I read it last night, so it's freshest to my mind. But he does make the argument, this is completely true, that league tables correlate to wage bills more than anything else. And it's why kind of net spend is kind of irrelevant because it's so variable. And he's put it also, there's never been any historic correlation in that regard. The key is salaries, because ultimately it's about getting a team together that works and then paying them what they're worth, which is the key. So even with United, say, in the 90s and what they became in the 2000s, yes, they developed all those players, but then unlike a Leicester or a West Ham United with Joe Cole and generation, they kept them there because they could pay them.
The problem Tottenham have got now, right?
Yeah. So
they had their own sort of mini golden generation of all a really good run of players all together at the same time, and they can't pay them the same as everybody else. So the market value of these players, they can't pay what they're worth.
Well, they sort of can, but don't want to.
That's true.
Liverpool obviously pride themselves on being such a kind of integral part of the local community. But do you think that can super clubs remain a true part of the social fabric of their community and of the country when they've got like an increasingly global and commercial outlook?
Well, that's it's a difficult balancing job. And to be fair, Liverpool has done quite well in their area, and you know they've maintained the link to, you know, sort of the local community. They do an awful lot in, you know, for sort of you know the civic metropolitan, the Merseyside metropolitan area, and they've done that. I'm not so sure they've fully come up with a good way of balancing it, because you know, I still think they believe that they're not maximising the global fan base in terms of financial return.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, they're still, we talk about them being run much better and commercially and being significantly better than they were, you know, pre-Fenway or in mid-Fenway even. But they're still in the process of learning and they're still in the process of developing. So, yeah, getting that balance right is probably going to be their big issue in the next 5 years.
I'd be interested in your thoughts on this and a bit of attention there, because it was actually something I was discussing with a Liverpool supporting friend the other day from Ireland. And obviously there's always been huge links between Ireland and Liverpool, and particularly in the last 30 years in terms of support. But we were discussing the fact that a lot of Irish Liverpool fans, it feels as if, especially those who go over, it feels as if supporting the club isn't enough. They have to buy into absolutely everything about what being a local Liverpool supporter is, which is, and we were actually pointing to a clear example, like they have to put card-carrying members of the Labour Party and recent times say huge support for Corbyn. Mm. So I saw, in like the Irish election's going on now, and I saw an Irish Liverpool fan I know from Dublin just going on about Jess Phillips and the English Labour Party. And it all felt like just within the context of his Liverpool support, rather, and you know, obviously all the don't buy the Sun stuff, even though I think for anyone outside Liverpool, that's an element of being a Liverpool supporter that can't be as connected if you're not from the community.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's always the difficulty, isn't it? Because, I mean, football clubs grew out of the communities.
Yeah.
You know, they grew out of churches, workers' associations, and they've become something else over the years. But there's still this longing to retain those links.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, you've got Peter Moore, you know, Liverpool's chief executive, talking about Liverpool's philosophy is grounded in socialism. Mm. And On one level, that's clearly the most absurd thing anyone could ever say. Yet on the other hand, because of Shankly, who talks about the famous socialism that I believe in is everyone working for each other and getting a fair share of the rewards. That's so embedded in the club, and Irish fans, not just Irish fans, fans from all over the world, take on this and kind of almost become more scouts than scouts. Yeah. And there is, you often see on Twitter, if people who, express support for Boris Johnson and Brexit with LFC or a Liverpool header on it, there's a huge attack from all sides on them.
But I thought my point is that would you ever sense any resentment from local fans about the international group that comes? Because one theory that I have is it's almost they feel as if they have to buy into it to almost for that acceptance. Mm. And the more they buy into the tropes of being, well, not the tropes, but certain accepted principles of being a Liverpool fan, the more they're accepted. And an example was thrown at me as well. There was that kind of racist photo that went around of like someone taking the piss out of a group of Asian fans that were at Anfield the other day. Mm. But an interesting thing there is that, say, Irish fans, right, would see themselves as the locals rather than also the international fans coming to a club that isn't their community.
Well, a decade ago, there's always a huge resentment against day trippers.
Yeah.
There is. And a decade ago, there was a huge backlash against Irish fans for coming wearing jest hats and things like that in the ground. That's not what you do, at Anfield. And it's moved away from the Irish fans to, fans from the Far East, who are, the new sort of folk devil for locals who say, we can't go into the ground because the day trippers. The reality is most of them probably can't get into the ground because of the prices.
Yeah.
There's a point where you've got to accept it's no longer a local game. It's a global game. And I think I would say the majority of Liverpool's local support accept that. Probably 60%, but there's still 40%, and these are my figures. I've just made them up off the top of my head, so don't write in. but there's still a substantial minority who are very resentful and would like it to be a completely scouse thing again.
Guys, really, unfortunately, we've got to wrap this up, so we're getting a lot of angry hands from
the top. Well, if it's the tone of the pod.
We should carry this on. Maybe we should carry this on next week. Let us know in the comments or on Twitter if you like that.
What did we not cover?
Yeah. Obviously, be sure to follow Indie Football on social media to keep up to date with all that's going on. If you're a new listener, please subscribe to the show on Apple, Spotify, Acast, or wherever you listen. And we'll see you next week. Goodbye.